I can certainly give you some maybe even more subjective comments.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're looking for.
Yeah.
You could start just by telling when you came here and kind of the institution of the Canadian presence here at the SRC.
Yeah, sure. Okay, I'm going to have to think a little bit about this myself. But, I came... I came to the facility, to Tantalus, it was March of 1975.
Okay.
And so I went there for 1 week, and I guess this, I'm just looking at the article as well, it's in there as well, but I went there for 1 week just to do an experiment, which I thought would be useful, and indeed it was. I worked with Dean Eastman from IBM, that was one of the real pioneers, and I hope you've talked to him. So I worked with him, and obviously Ed Rowe was very important in encouraging the major users of the facility at that time to take other people for experiments. And my experiment was not particularly compatible with what Dean Eastman was doing. So it was fantastic that they let me do some work on that beamline in that chamber. So I went for a week then, and that convinced me that I wanted to do more, and so I had a sabbatical coming up in July 75 to July 76. I'd already made arrangements to go to Sweden to work with Siegbahn, who later won the Nobel Prize for X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy. But I had another 6 months, and I was planning at that time, before I went to Madison, to go to England to work with somebody else in a different technique, but that changed my mind, and so I decided to spend 6 months of my sabbatical in Madison, and working with Dean Eastman and one of his postdocs, Wolfgang Gudant, who went on to be director of the Bessie Lab in Berlin. And so I spent a very profitable and interesting 6 months there, and that made me think that I had to do more work in this area, using the Tantalus synchrotron, and then of course what was then planned for Aladdin. And so at about that time, one of my colleagues who had been pushing synchrotron radiation at my university and actually got me in touch with Ed Rowe to begin with, he was putting in a proposal for a Canadian synchrotron, and this was in 1975. This is actually about the same time I was working in Madison, and later in Sweden. That proposal was not successful because there were very few users, Canadian users of synchrotron radiation at the time. As you can imagine, there were only a few people who had done any experiment.
Mm-hmm.
After that failure, I decided with my colleague Bill McGowan to put in a proposal for a beamline at Tantalus, and actually at Aladdin, because by that Aladdin was expected to be up by the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
We proposed a fairly standard beamline and got a lot of help. Certainly, I had no experience in beamlines, and none of my colleagues did, but the people at the lab were incredibly helpful Charlie Pruitt, Ed Rowe, especially I guess Charlie Pruitt for the Beamline. And so we put together a proposal and submitted that in 1977. In October 1977 for a Beamline, and we called it. We hoped to get more Beamlines, and so we called it the Canadian Synchrotron Radiation Facility, the CSRF.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had Ed Rowe was, I think, had a bit of a soft spot for. He was very good at getting people to interact, anyways, but he had a bit of a soft spot for Canadians. He had some Canadian relatives that lived in just near Kingston, Ontario, and so he was extremely helpful in the whole. You know, a number of people were, especially Charlie Pruitt, were incredibly cooperative in helping us out. And so we submitted this proposal for one beamline plus three end chambers. With two of my other colleagues, and we got substantially less money than that, but the grant was basically successful, and we got $320,000 in 1978. But there was as my article indicates, there were problems in getting the rest of the money, and also in getting somebody to look after it. We'd be resident in Madison, but I, with a lot of help from my own university, which I wouldn't have got from other people, it turns out, but
mm-hmm.
at the time I was lucky to have the administrators in place that were supportive, and I was able to get things together so we were able to go ahead and hire an employee, my memory is awful. Kim Tan.
Mm-hmm.
And Kim started working down there, I think, in 79, and worked actually with Neil Lean and Charlie Pruitt and Fred Brown through Baker Engineering for the monochromator. And that was actually Kim helped put it together, and so he was very good at operating and fixing it, etc. And of course, the Aladdin was delayed, and I'd already hired one or two graduate students to work on this in 79-80, and we did. So we had to do our first experiments on Tantalus,
mm-hmm.
But that got us going. And the equipment that we put together then was working until last year, the Grasshopper monochromator, Canadian Grasshopper. So it was immensely rugged and robust and reliable piece of equipment. And we got, of course, a large tremendous number of results and papers off that beamline. I made a list of that. I don't really have our publications there, but I could send that to you. We've got a list of publications which I mentioned in the article. But we got overall about 550 publications, I think it was, and probably 300 off that, over 300 off that one beamline. So from 1982 to 2007, so 25 years. So it produced at least 10 papers a year for 10 or 15 papers a year for 25 years in a row. So that was really, really terrific. I think from my point of view, the support that I got was from the lab, both technical and administrative, was a model for international collaborations anywhere in the world. I mean, I've been all over the world, and I've seen all sorts, and seen what happens in other labs, and this was pretty remarkable. I obviously had problems working in the States, having a lab in the States with paying our employees. We started off with Kim, and then we hired, we ended up with three employees in about 10 years. And, you know, paying their medical insurance and getting their salary fairly constant with fluctuating Canadian dollar, and ordering things through them and getting it paid, and that Esther and her office were always really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And the technical support we got through the lab was, so we didn't have to hire electronics technicians or vacuum technicians, was really outstanding. So that was a very, very important part of our success, I think, in getting this thing up and going and continuing for over 25 years.
Yeah. So the Beamline that you built went on a Tantalus at first because Aladdin was not up and running.
That's right.
And then when did you transfer it over to Aladdin?
Well, we were the first people to, as soon as the Aladdin problems were solved and they began to get reasonable performance with reasonable currents, we might have been the first ones to transfer over, and I guess maybe we took a little bit of a risk because I think Aladdin's performance still wasn't completely confirmed, but
mm-hmm.
Other people have to comment on that, but... so I forget exactly when that was. It was right at the beginning of Aladdin coming up. So that, I don't know, would it be 82 or 83? 82, I think.
Okay.
Or is it 81 even? I can't remember.
82 sounds about right. Aladdin
82, was... 82, I think it began to work reasonably, and we were certainly in the first couple of beam lines to switch over and get going. Yeah.
All right. And I know it mentions in the article, but can you comment a little bit about the work that you did with at Aladdin?
Yeah, we did a wide range of different kinds of experiments. Mainly, I guess the major, and of course, it wasn't just me. We got a large number of Canadians involved, and certainly in that article, there's a list of the theses from I forget how many different universities in Canada. Certainly more than 10. So there's 50 or 60 theses that were performed, and it's, you know, it's a wide range of stuff, anywhere from mineral type work to gas phase. Fundamental gas phase, Auger and photoelectron spectroscopy, a lot of materials type work, including nanomaterials that TK Sham did an awful lot of work on. I ended up doing a lot of work in the area of tribology, which is the study of friction and wear, and That was extremely successful. We got a big program on that going with some of the oil companies. Imperial Oil, which is the Canadian arm of Exxon, and Chevron in California. We've had collaborations with them for over a decade, and so we got a large number of papers out looking at very thin tribological films on mainly on steel, but on other metals as well. And the techniques that we used, which mainly X-ray absorption spectroscopy or ZANES, X-A-N-E-S, gave much more chemical information than any other, and still does, gives much more chemical information than any other technique. And so we've published, in the last 15 years, probably 60 or 70 papers on those tribological films.
Hmm.
and using of not only Zanes but different microscopy techniques that we used. Had very good collaboration, for example, with Pupa Distacio, using her PEAM instrument. And so we got a number of, I think, very good papers out on the nanostructure and nanochemistry of these films. So that again was another excellent collaboration on another piece of equipment, often on other beamlines as well. Although we did a vast majority of work on the Canadian beamlines. We certainly did some on the other beamlines there, and that's a good example of that kind of work with Pupa.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of a lot of the gas phase work that we did originally with the Seppo and Helena Exela, AKSELE, in the 80s, in the early 80s. They were some of the earliest users with us at doing OJ and so-called resonance OJ spectra of inert gases. He was an experimentalist and she was a theoretician, and we published a large number of papers that are very widely recognized now on that. And then they went back. This is a good kind of story of a important offshoot of the work. They went back and applied for money for a very good high-resolution beamline on the Swedish cyclotron. And they got that working in the early 90s, and did a huge amount of work on mainly much higher resolution spectra than what we were able to obtain, and published maybe 100 papers, I would think, off that afterwards. We got probably close to 10 papers. I got close to 10 papers with them from their work just in Wisconsin. But they went back, constructed a Finnish beamline in the Swedish synchrotron, and got world leading results in the 90s on mostly on inert gases. So that's a very nice spin-off, I think, showing the kind of thing that can happen, of course, when you get somebody working and then they go off and do something in a different place, and often much better.
Yeah.
So those are some of the areas. T.K. Sham certainly has pioneered through the work at Tantalus a novel technique that he calls my memory is giving me more and more troubles here. I'll think about it in a minute. It's a fluorescence technique, optical fluorescence, X-ray emitted optical luminescence, X-E-O-L, and he did a lot of work on that, on materials and nanomaterials, which is very well known, and he's collaborated a lot with people at Argonne and High Energy, and now is doing a lot of that work at the CLS in Saskatoon. I did a lot of work, very fundamental gas phase, high resolution spectroscopy, with people like a student, John Bozek, who went on to, has been a beamline guy at Berkeley, at the ELS, and now he's one of the guys at the new Stanford X-ray source, very high intensity X-ray source. A lot of that gas phase work has been very widely excited as well, with mainly with John and a couple of other students. And of course, that leads to the role of students, that a lot of these students and postdocs that work, not only the Excellers went on to great work in Sweden, but John Bozek went to the ELS, Jeff Cutler and a bunch of people are at the CLS in Saskatoon now. Jeff Cutler and Brian Yates, and Kim Tan, and one of TK students, Ian, can't remember his name. So there's quite a number of the students that worked at the Wisconsin Synchrotron have gone on and done really good work at other places, and that, of course, is an important aspect of any kind of scientific research.
And after your time here, did a synchrotron source start up in Canada?
Well, what happened was that we were always thinking about a Canadian source, so we'd been turned down in 1976. And then in the early 90s, by this time we had two beam lines. In the early 90s, we had two beam lines at Wisconsin, at Aladdin. And there was an impetus in the early 90s to develop a Canadian source once again. You know, of course, obviously the synchrotron sources were being built all over the world. Canada did not have one. And so a group of people got together in the early 90s to look at getting a Canadian source again. We organized a group called the Canadian Institute of Synchrotron Radiation, CISR. And I was the president of that in the early 90s till 1999, when we got the funding for the Canadian Synchrotron in 1998. And so the use of that group certainly was decreased, although it continued on. And so we did a lot of lobbying in the 1990s. At that time, the economy wasn't good, and there was looked as though there was no hope until all of a sudden the federal government got over a lot of their deficits, and the finance minister at the time was quite a remarkable man, Paul Martin. He later became prime minister, and he wasn't so good at that, perhaps, but as finance minister, he turned the new surpluses over to the universities in a huge, I think he promised $3 billion for a whole variety of professorships and equipment for universities. And that was remarkably successful. We had our proposal all ready to go with Saskatoon and Western being the main two places. And it went to Saskatoon. I tried to get it here, but it went to Saskatoon. I don't think I need to get into that. That's another story, perhaps. And so it was funded then by 1997, and end of 1997, 98, and maybe it was May 1998, come to think of it. And then we went to, I went to Saskatoon as the first director of the Canadian Light Source in 1999. So I was there for 2 years during the construction, a lot of the construction of the building and the planning and that. And then I worked for the next 4 years half-time with Saskatoon out of University of Western Ontario. Went back and forth to Saskatoon. So there's no question that the operation in Madison was a critical component to justify the Canadian Light Source.
Yeah.
All of the soft X-ray work in Canada was done, or virtually all of the soft X-ray work was done at Aladdin, and that was was a very big component. Most of the publications, most of the Canadian publications came out of Aladdin. Obviously, the hard X-ray work was not done at Aladdin, and there were quite a few people doing hard X-ray work by then as well, especially, for example, protein crystallographers, etc. And they were publishing a lot as well. So, that was certainly important to justify. You know, there were 50. I think there by 1999 there were 50 groups in Canada that were doing protein crystallography at synchrotrons around the world, and so that was certainly very important as well to justify it. But you know, there's no question that the work that we did at Aladdin was very important in getting the Canadian light source.
Mm-hmm. What would you say was your time spent with the Tantalus and Aladdin?
What time span?
Yeah, of your time at Aladdin and when you
what
left.
Percentage of my time? Well, that's a good question, and I can't give you an exact answer, but so things got going, well by 1982-83. By 1984, we were going very strongly on the one beam line, and we were publishing a lot of papers by 1985. I had by the mid 80s a number of good students who were working on the synchrotron. Kim Tan was holding the fort. It was just him was holding the fort in Wisconsin. I was there at least four times a year, I think. For usually around a week each, something like that. I was chair of my department from 1986 to 1995, with a year off between. So I was very, very busy, and I was still traveling a fair bit to back and forth to Wisconsin. At that time, it was a bit of a bind. London, Ontario is only... It's only nine or ten hour drive to Madison,
mm-hmm.
But to go by plane often took 6 hours because, for example, in the early days, I always went Toronto, London, Toronto, Chicago, Madison. So three flights, and it took 6, 7, 8 hours often, and it was a pain in the ass, quite frankly. Then we got buses to Detroit, and then Detroit, Madison, directly. Then we got fortunately got planes from London to London to Detroit, and then Detroit, Madison. Sometimes I could get there in the 90s in 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a tremendous improvement. But I basically ran the thing. I organized the scheduling. We had a committee that sat once a year to oversee the finances, and I raised the money for the operating money throughout all the years, and set up the schedules. But Kim was certainly incredibly important in the early days, especially in helping the students on a day-to-day basis, because I certainly wasn't there. On a day-to-day basis. So, yeah, I would think over the years, I was there on average about 4 weeks a year for 25 years.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still a fair amount of time over the 25 years. It's something I always enjoyed, going there and staying in the cow pasture, for example.
Yeah.
Staying in the residence. walking out in the country.
Yep. Well, all right, that's all the questions I have for now. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so. Other than, as I said before, it was incredibly good collaboration in the best sense of everything, and especially because it was across a border with some problems. It was an incredibly positive atmosphere there, and I can just say that I think certainly I'm incredibly grateful for the help that I got, and I think many other people are as well. So I think it, you know, the facility needs to get a lot of accolades for what they did. They're incredibly successful over the years. I mean, the last few years, it's obviously been going down to some extent with publications, but in the early days, in the 70s and 80s, it was just incredible. The atmosphere was incredible because there were a lot of excellent people that were working there, and it was really, really terrific.
Great. Well, thanks for your help, Mike.
Okay. Thanks very much. If you got anything else, let me know. When do you hope to get this thing out?
Boy, I don't know.
it's a long way down, eh?
Yeah, but we've come a long way since the start of it. I'll be continuing on for the rest of the summer, and then most of our data fact-finding should end with the summer, and then I can start writing this fall. So I'm hoping by the end of next spring, we should really be wrapping it up.
Okay. Yeah, well, get back to me if you have any other questions.
Will do. Thanks again.
Okay, then.
Bye.
Thanks very much. Say hello to Esther, then.
I will.
Okay, then.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.